Well, good morning, everybody, on the West Coast, and good afternoon to those of you who are on the East Coast or after 12 o'clock. Good to have you all here. I think we've got about 2 minutes before we start, but I think probably at this stage we can just go ahead from here. So just a quick introduction from me. I am Judith Stark, an accessible technology consultant for the Pacific ADA Center, and the accessible technology webinar series that we offer is sponsored by the Great Lakes ADA Center and the Pacific ADA Center, both of whom are members of the ADA National Network. So before we begin, just a couple of housekeeping items. Please do feel free to put any questions that you have in the chat room, as Jessica pointed out to you earlier. We will be monitoring them, and Jonathan will respond to them during the course of the session. One point about today's session is that we are going to be jumping between the presentation and Jonathan's computer. So for those of you who are not able to necessarily follow along visually, he will be giving a good description of it, and we will also be handing out notices of those particular apps that he is demonstrating to you. So please feel free to download those at your leisure when you get those apps, and follow along with him or follow afterwards as well. Okay, so without further ado, let me introduce you to Jonathan. Jonathan Campbell works as an assistive technology specialist for PACE's Simon Technology Center. He has experience working as a computer trainer at Apple and working hands-on as a paraprofessional and classroom aide assisting children with disabilities. He has a passion for technology that he uses to present, promote, and inform about the benefits of assistive technology through workshops, training, and in-services. Using his video production and multimedia skills, Jonathan produces projects like the Assistive Technology in Action video series that highlights assistive technology users, the Simply Said video series that explains complex concepts in easy to understand language, and don't we all need that, and the AT Minute series that demonstrates assistive technology. All these video projects are freely available at the PACER Center YouTube channel, and Jonathan, through the course of his presentation, will also tell you how to get a hold of those. So without further ado, I think we can go ahead and welcome Jonathan. I'm going to switch over to you, and please continue with your presentation.
Well, thank you very much for that nice introduction. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the presentation on high quality apps for accessibility. I have been with PACER for about 5.5 years now. So during that time is when the first iPad became available. And since then, I've been working with PACER as all the new Android and all the other tablets have come out as well. So we've had a lot of experience with a lot of different devices, and what this presentation is going to be today is to talk about some of the really high quality apps that a lot of the specialists who work here at PACER have frequently shown to people coming in for technology consultations or have explored themselves or are avid users themselves. So we're going to be looking at just a handful of ones that I had a discussion with the other staff here, and they just thought these were some of the really, really great apps. But there are over 1 million apps in the iOS App Store alone. There's over 1 million also in the Android App Store. So rather than trying to hit you with a gigantic list of everything, that's why we decided to look at what is the best of. Now, I wanted to give you, though, some more robust and expansive lists than I'm even able to go over today. So there was a handout distributed that has a variety of links in there. And these are workshop handouts, presentation handouts on apps that we've done over the years. And you'll find literally a list of hundreds of apps that we've explored through iOS, Android. We even have a handout I made available that even emphasizes some of the BlackBerry apps, which is less common, but they also have some really great apps as well. So we're going to look at some of the really great stuff today, some of the stuff that the specialists here have told me that these are the really best and some of the ones I really love myself. But no, you can go to that handout, and we've got links to publications that we put together that are quite expansive over the last, I kept the last 2 or 3 years in there. We had a couple that are older, but once they get older, you know, app features change, prices change, and starts to get less relevant. So I just want to make it clear what we're going to talk about today, but I also want to let you know that we have a ton of resources available on the PACER site as well. For those of you who are maybe not familiar with the PACER Center, we're a nonprofit located in Minnesota that serves families with children with disabilities, that's primarily staffed by parents of children with disabilities, and has over 30 different programs. The Simon Technology Center, which is where I come from, is just one of those 30 programs. And at the Technology Center, we get to do a lot of cool stuff with the latest technology. And what we are here to do is we are dedicated to making the benefits of technology accessible to children and adults with disabilities. And we do this by collaborating with parents, professionals, and consumers. We also work with all ages. So we have specialists that work in early childhood, all the way up to working with seniors as well. We go anywhere from suspected learning disabilities to physical disabilities, access issues, the whole gambit. And what we can do, what we do in the center is offer information referral services to families. Anybody can contact us and ask questions about specific technology needs. We also have a lending library, although that lending library right now is only available to Minnesota residents, but we have this great AT Finder page at pacer.org/stc/AT Finder that's a list of everything we have in our library. And even though you might not be a Minnesota resident, it's a great place to look at the types of tools that are available. It's a gigantic listing of assistive technology, and it's all categorized and organized, and it might be a good place to explore, even if you're not going to lend things from the library. I suggest that you check it out. We also offer technology consultations for individuals who can make it to our center in Minneapolis, along with individualized trainings and workshops. Now, you can find out a lot more about the STC, the services, or information referral services through our website, which is just at pacer.org/STC for Simon Technology Center, and that's a great starting point. If you're a social networking person, you can check us out on Facebook, and we're at facebook.com/Simon Technology Center, no spaces. Earlier, we mentioned some of those videos. We've got these really great videos called Assistive Technology in Action that we put together that literally interviews individuals who are using assistive technology and has them demonstrate what type of tools they use and what the process was for them to find, acquire, and master those tools. Nobody can tell it better than the people who are experiencing it, and that's a great video series. You can find that and our Simply Said video series and much, much more on our YouTube page, which is just at youtube.com/PACERCenter. And you'll find that we also post webinars and other events and other videos on there as well, so you'll find a lot of great resources there. And for those of you who are all about social networking as well, we do have a blog page called at simontechnologycenter.blogspot.com, where we post a lot of interesting articles, and we also post a lot of our handouts there of presentations, so it's a great place to explore. We've got a Twitter account. We are at PACERSTC. And you'll see we've got a really interesting tweet event. I don't have an exact schedule for that. That's going to be a discussion around basic assistive technology that's going to be coming out this fall. And we have a rather robust Pinterest page at pinterest.com/SimonTechCenter. And that's pretty active. We've got some pretty active Pinterest users basically finding great resources, new technology, interesting ideas, and sharing them on that site. So if you're a Pinterest user, another great way to get to us. So a lot of great ways to get the resources that PACER has and the Simon Technology Center has. So getting on to the material for our presentation today, I'm going to start out by talking a little bit about what type of tools come for free on every mobile device right now. And I'm going to be focusing on the iOS, which is Apple's operating system, and the Android operating system, those taking up probably 95% of the entire market. I do realize that there are some really great tablets called the Surface and RT and Surface Pro tablets from Microsoft that are really interesting. They're a small portion of the market, so we're not going to focus on them today, but they have some amazing products as well. After we're done talking about that, I am going to talk a little bit about some of the new accessibility features. Both Apple and Google have announced new accessibility features that will be coming to their platforms in fall. So I'll just tell you a little bit about that so you can get an idea of what's coming down the pipeline. Then we're going to look at a couple apps in a variety of categories. So we're going to start looking at reading tools, both text-to-speech and book reading apps, tools for writing, some great math apps, communication apps. We'll talk a little bit about social skills, organization, and vision apps. Now, we only have an hour and a half, so I'm going to be moving through a lot of these apps rather quickly. I'm going to be focusing just on two or three in each category so that we can actually go in and do a demo of those. If, when we get to the end, there's going to be some time for questions. I'm going to just be discussing apps in each category, but at that time, if you would like me to go back and look at some apps that maybe we didn't have time to demo, I'd be happy to review those. So please use the chat area at the end to discuss that. If you do have questions, please use the chat as well to ask questions as we go through. I'm happy to take those. So without further ado, because we've got a lot to talk about, let's jump right into what is built in to Apple's devices, or the iOS devices, as it's commonly called. And those include the iPad, iPad mini, iPhone, and iPod Touch. The iPod Touch being a very interesting device. Apple's one of the last manufacturers making mobile devices like PDAs that are not dependent on having a phone network or being quite large. So the iPod Touch is essentially an iPhone without the phone capabilities as well. So that's good for individuals who need some of those apps, but we don't want to get put into a contract or deal with a lot of the hassle that comes along with having a cell phone. Now, Apple's got a rather robust set of accessibility features. They started adding their accessibility in very aggressively starting when the iPhone 3GS came out, and they added in initially, which was VoiceOver, which is Apple's screen reader. We're going to be using an app today that actually requires VoiceOver, so you're going to be, if you've never seen VoiceOver before and never worked with it, we're going to be using it for a brief period of time today. They do have a magnification feature called Zoom. You can invert the colors, which actually just reverses the colors, so that's really good if you're better at reading black background with white text, for example, on a web page. You can invert those, changes the contrast quite a bit. They do have a speak selection, which allows you to highlight text and to have it read back to you. It does not work in every single app, but works in apps that we're going to be doing writing and in many of the book reading apps as well. They have been adding features for increasing the text, bolding the text, some of the buttons, especially in the new iOS 7, the new design that Apple went with. It can be a little bit harder to differentiate what's a button versus what's text in the screen. So they've added something called button shapes that will actually add more obvious borders around buttons, making them easier to identify. You can increase the contrast on the screen. And iOS offers this motion effect that makes it so when you tilt the iPhone, it actually shifts the view a little bit. And also, there's lots of views that when you tap, it zooms something in close to the screen. It's actually quite a bit of sensory, quite intense sensory experience for some individuals. And so they've added the ability to reduce the amount of motion that occurs on the screen. So instead of getting a zoom, you might get a cross dissolve, which is a less intense sensory experience. And you can turn that on in the accessibility features as well. And it also allowed, there's on and off buttons on the iPhone that an iPad that maybe for some users might be hard to differentiate whether, if they're in the on or off position, and they added some text labels to those. So So that alone is just the features that you're going to see for vision. You'll see they also have a variety of features for emphasis for individuals with a hearing impairment, physical and motor difficulties, and they have something they put under the category learning as well. So hearing, you're going to have, it's got rather robust support for Bluetooth-enabled hearing aids. In fact, there's some new hearing aids coming out right now that are designed to integrate well with the iPhone. They do allow you to view subtitles and captions in videos. These are videos that, of course, are supplying those. So if you go to iTunes and try to buy a movie, you'll see movies are marked closed captioning, and you can turn on by default captioning on your videos. This is not just to media you buy in iTunes, though. If you're using other apps, it will turn on captioning if captions are provided for those videos, and they have a caption-based system to try to make it easier for developers to use captioning inside of their apps. So for instance, if you go to your settings and turn on captioning and then use the Netflix app, for example, and you watch a video on Netflix that has captions, it will automatically make the captions available so you don't have to physically turn them on. If you're using an iPhone, for alerts, you can actually have flash the LED flash that it uses for the camera to get your attention. It has mono audio, which allows you to feed the audio that might be coming through stereo, which might be breaking up your audio between the left and right ear. Some music does this, for example, so the drum line's more on the left side than the right side. But you might have someone whose hearing is coming from mostly one ear. We can turn on mono so that they can experience the entire, both levels of audio, like the left and right, in the same ear. They do have noise cancellation for phone calls, and they allow you to adjust things like audio balance. Learning uses something called guided access, and guided access essentially allows you to lock an app into place so that you can only be using one app at a time. It's great for focusing a student or for an individual who needs to use an iPad as a single-use device. You can turn on guided access and it password locks an app into place. There's some more to that as well, but for physical and motor controls, they do have recently added something called switch control. And switch control is a system-wide support for switch users. Now, this is a rather robust feature that we're not going to have time to go in today, but allows you to use a wireless switch and with the right equipment, a wired switch, and it will scan or do step scanning for making selections on the screen. And it's quite robust, and with it you can actually perform just about any task using a switch instead of having to actually touch the touchscreen. Or you can turn the touchscreen into one giant switch. So that's a relatively new feature, and you're going to see that's getting better in each new version of iOS. They have something called assistive touch. Assistive touch adds a button to the screen that assists in performing gestures that motor difficulties might make it difficult. For example, if an individual cannot isolate two fingers to perform a pinch gesture, which is where you take two fingers on the screen and then pull them away or together. Many apps use this to magnify portions of the screen. That can be very difficult for someone who can only isolate a single finger. And assistive touch is designed to allow you to perform those types of gestures with just a single contact point. Some functions on the iPad are also done by clicking the home button, which is the only physical button on the front face of your iPhone or iPad, by clicking it more than one times in a row. Double tapping it opens up what's called the app selector. Tapping it three times can actually be used to turn certain accessibility features on and off. You can adjust the speed at which you have to press that button in the settings so that if you have a difficulty hitting it in rapid succession, you can adjust that. So there's lots of other adjustments for incoming calls and other features as well. So you can see it's a rather robust set of accessibility features that we're seeing right now in the most recent version of iOS, which is iOS 7. But iOS 8 was recently announced and it's coming in fall. There's not an exact release date for that yet. We should probably maybe expect it around September, and we should probably expect it to come out about the same time Apple releases any new phones or iPads or other devices as well. Now, they've given some pretty extensive previews, and there's a demo version out for developers to test their apps on. I have had the privilege of downloading the iOS 8 app and trying it out and watching some of their tutorial videos. And there is a variety of new accessibility features. They are greatly improving the screen magnifier on the iPad. Right now, to magnify the screen, you have to use these three-finger gestures. So tapping twice with three fingers brings up a menu. Tapping twice and holding on the second tap and moving your fingers up and down moves or change the magnification. And there's more and more and more. And some of these gestures were particularly hard to master. If you have any sort of motor difficulties, it made it very difficult. So they've gone about and changed the way the magnification works in iOS 8. It's going to be significantly easier. We're going to allow things like a slider to increase and decrease the magnification. We're going to have contrast controls and color inversion all within the Zoom app. And it's all going to be just tapping the screen once with three fingers to do all those tasks. So they made Zoom significantly better. They added a grayscale mode, so you can view the screen without the colors and just a grayscale appearance. They're also adding support for video descriptions. So audio described videos will be able to integrate their descriptions inside of videos, inside the app, so the viewer can turn those features on and off without having to load a separate video, for example. Now that's going to be limited to apps that supply video descriptions, but it's nice that they have that now system-wide, making it easier for developers and making it a built-in tool. We should start to see those show up also in iTunes content, movies and TV shows purchased through there. One of the big announcements is they're going to allow you to load in custom keyboards right now on an iOS device. If you wanted to use a special keyboard, and we're going to show you one that's a word prediction keyboard, you would have to go into a special app and do all your writing inside of that app. They're now making it so that developers can actually put their custom keyboards across the system and they'll work everywhere. So this is going to be really good for users who need word prediction or want to use a different way of typing text into the screen. And so that's going to be coming along in fall as well. They're adding another feature called extensions. Extensions are a little complicated, so we're not going to get into it in detail, but basically it makes it so you can take features from one app and have it to be available in other apps. The example they give is if you're in the web browser, you can tap a button and it will load up Bing's translation tools, and it will attempt to translate the text right in the web browser. What we're going to see is we're going to see apps that are going to allow us to enhance other apps with features like this. And that's a feature that, until they start coming up more extensions, I don't want to talk about it too much. But there's going to be some exciting new types of apps because of this. And by popular demand, they're adding time limits through the guided access tool. So you can set it up so you can set a time limit. So for instance, I can turn on guided access, which locks an app in place. Say they've got 10 minutes, and it will count down time, and in 10 minutes it will lock the iPad. It will also give visual cues to the user as the time gets closer to the end, so they can be prepared for their transition away from that activity. The last thing, and this is something I haven't been able to get my hands on for a full demo, but I know they're working on, is a Braille keyboard built into iOS. And the Braille keyboard will allow you to use your fingers and tap on the screen like you were using a Braille note taker. So those of you who are familiar with the Braille note taker will know that you typically six main keys and a space bar. There's a lot of different layouts and so forth. I'm not going to go into those, but there'll be one that's built in so that a user who prefers to write with Braille or is used to writing on a Braille keyboard will be able to do it on the touchscreen. Haven't gotten a great preview of that. Don't know exactly what it looks like. One of the apps that in the handout is called Braille Touch. I suspect it's going to be similar to that app, which is a free app to try and explore as well. So we'll talk about that a little later. So a lot of interesting new accessibility features coming on iOS 8. We'll expect those around fall. Pretty much every iPad from the iPad 2 and up will support this. The iPhone one goes quite a ways back as well. So these features will be available to most people who are using iOS 7 right now. So Google makes their own mobile operating system called Android. And the Android operating system differentiates from iOS because Apple makes all iOS devices. So they have a very consistent look and screen size and appearance, and their feature sets are all very, very, very similar. Android is an open source operating system. Google does, through third-party manufacturers, make their own. So that one on the left is the Nexus tablet, a 10-inch tablet that Apple helps go through. Android helps manufacture. You'll see it on mobile phones, but you'll also see a variety of different screen sizes. What makes the Android operating system unique is that developers can modify the operating system to add features that are unique to their devices or change the appearance of the Android operating system. Because of that, some of the accessibility features are a little inconsistent from one to the next, depending on how far back the OS on the device you're using allows you to go and what type of extra features they might have added to it. But the core Android accessibility features include a screen reader called TalkBack that allows you to navigate the screen by gestures and touch by reading back what's on the screen. It's a similar implementation than VoiceOver. They have some different feature sets, but the concepts are somewhat similar. They do have their own built-in magnifier. You can adjust the text size on the screen in many of the apps. It will allow you, when typing in a password, to actually read that password auditorially back to you to help out with cutting down on errors if you have difficulty typing. And it does have text-to-speech support, although it varies from device to device. Many of the times you'll be downloading a special third-party app to get some of those text-to-speech features to work. They do offer support for captions. And for motor difficulties, they offer something called touch and hold delay, which makes it so if you have a difficulty tapping and releasing quickly, which is what a normal typically tap is, finger down, finger up fairly quickly, you can adjust the delay so that the device might know that you might take a little bit longer lifting that finger back off again, or you might be holding that longer. So that's a touch and hold delay. They do offer a nice built-in voice search similar to Siri. I didn't put Siri as an accessibility feature on the last slide, although you can use it like an accessibility feature. And something that's unique to the Android devices is some of them support plugging in a mouse, which you can actually use a cursor, which is similar to how you might use a desktop computer. There is no mouse support whatsoever in iOS. In fact, the iOS devices have no knowledge of what exactly a mouse is. Touch is the way that you interact entirely through iOS. So that's something that's unique to the Android operating system. And they've had custom keyboards, the ability to load a completely different keyboard in with text-to-speech and word prediction, swiping across the screen with your finger without having to take it off again. There's a variety of different custom keyboards, and they've had those for a while. Now, at Google's last conference, they announced they're releasing a new version of Android called Android L. That's going to be coming in fall of 2014, although its availability on different mobile devices will depend partially on the manufacturer supporting it, so you'll want to check with the maker of your Android tablet to figure when Android L comes out for availability. They're adding two new accessibility features to the Android operating system. They're going to add the ability to invert colors, so it's going to reverse all the colors on the screen. Like I said, if you're for iOS, if you're on a web page and you'd rather have it be black background with white text, you can invert the colors and change the contrast significantly. And they are offering a brand new unique accessibility feature I haven't seen on mobile devices before called color correction mode. And color correction mode is actually a tool specifically for colorblind users, where the navigation, the color scheme on the device is going to change and the color contrast you're going to adjust depending on the type of color blindness an individual might have. And considering the large percentage of people who have some form of color blindness, this could be a really nice feature when you're using an app that uses a lot of colors and contrasts in order to identify elements on the screen. So that's something that's going to be available in the Android Might apps, and developers will be able to implement this color correction mode as well. So that's coming out in fall. Neither I know iOS or Android have an official release date, so we're going to have to be patient, but we should expect something around the mid to late fall is what I would suspect. All right, so now we've got a pretty good idea of what's available as far as accessibility features go. We talked about them briefly. The best way to learn is to go into the settings and go to accessibility. There is one tip that we've been using quite a bit here at the STC for individuals with motor difficulties that's not a feature adjustment you can do on the device. It's something that you can actually do in the real world. Is we've had several users who like the touchscreen as an interaction. It's better than a mouse or a joystick because they have a motor difficulty, but they have a difficult time hovering their hand over the screen without touching it or isolating a single finger to make a contact point. Because if you have two fingers, sometimes the devices think you're zooming in rather than making a selection. We've had several people actually try putting on gloves. There are some special gloves for use in mobile devices because most mobile devices have a conductive touchscreen, which means the slightest touch from a hand which is a conductive surface, will register as an input. It's not pressure. Like if you go to the bank, many a times they've got a touchscreen, but you've got to push hard sometimes because it's actually the pressure on your finger. Well, most of these devices use a conductive, which is really light. And we can take advantage of that because a glove is an insulator and it will block the signal from your hand to the touchscreen. And so we had a gentleman come in put on a pair of, he actually did fishing gloves, because fishing gloves cover your whole hand but have an opening around the thumb and the index finger. The idea is if it's really cold and you're out ice fishing, you can still grab the hook and run the line through it. And that actually worked really well for him, or some fingerless gloves are good. And what that allowed him to do is to actually rest his hand right on the iPad screen without it interfering, and then he could drag his hand across and he could just tap with his finger when he wanted to make a selection. It was a great tool. We've had a couple people we know use it very successfully, and it works on pretty much any tablet. All right, so now we're going to start talking about some of the apps, and I'm going to be doing some switching around a little bit here between the slides that you can see here a feed of my iPad screen. I'm going to do my best I can to describe everything that's going on just in case you cannot access or see that screen or there's a delay for you. We're going to go through you're going to go through two or three in each category in detail. So to start us out here, there is a variety of reading apps there that offer text-to-speech. So what that does is it takes the text that's on the iPad screen or the Android device and will read it out loud to you using a computerized voice, typically. Now, the iPad and the Android do have some functionality to turn any app into this, but these apps are exceptional because they allow the gathering and inputting of digital content really easily. And they offer great tools that help you follow along as the text-to-speech occurs. One of the most popular ones for the longest time has been an app called Read2Go. Read2Go was designed to work with content from Bookshare.org. And if you're not familiar with Bookshare.org, I encourage you to go to their website and look them up. They offer in copyright digital text to individuals with print-related disabilities. And if you're a student, it's actually available for free. These are going to be new books. You're going to get Harry Potter is going to be in there. You're going to find the Divergent books, for example, are going to be in there. And they allow, with the digital text, they allow you to use a reading app to have it actually read out loud to you. And Read2Go was one of the first ones to support this and to work with Bookshare in iOS. So I'm going to flip over now so you can see my iPad, and we're going to take a quick look at Read2Go. So I've got my iPad loaded up here. I'm going to be switching between apps fairly quickly. So rather than navigating through my iPad, I'm going to be doing a lot of searching. So you're going to see me do this. I'm going to tap and pull down across my screen to bring up the search, and I'm going to be typing in Read2Go. Read wasn't enough for me. I'm going to tap on Read2Go to open it up. And I'm going to be using that as my way of navigating throughout this demonstration. So this is what Read2Go looks like. It's got something called the bookshelf. So this is a list that you'll see in the center of the screen of all the books available. Right now I just have Anne of Green Gables and The Call of the Wild. These two books are out of copyright. We don't qualify for Bookshare membership, so we can't get the brand new in copyright content, but we can actually get anything that's out of copyright, so any classics as well. To use Bookshare, I can search. I'm going to tap on, across the bottom here you'll see four buttons, a bookshelf, search, settings, and help. If I do tap on settings, you'll see it gives me options to adjust the size of the font, the way the text looks, the way the audio plays back. We're going to look through some of those in just a moment. And you'll see my account and sign in as an option. If you're at a Bookshare account, this is where you're going to type in your account information.
Settings.
I'm going to go to search real quick so you can see how I might find a book after I've logged into Bookshare. So I'm going to type in Tom Sawyer. So you'll see there's a search area across the top. I just tapped in and I typed the word Tom Sawyer. And I'm going to tap on the button that says search.
Results 1-4 of 67.
You'll hear I get some text-to-speech readback from Bookshare. Explain to me what it's found. I have a list and I can see Tom Sawyer Abroad, Tom Sawyer Detective. I can even see some various different versions. You'll see an option across the bottom that says unavailable. Unavailable are books that are only available to Bookshare members. Everything else that I'm seeing are books that are available out of copyright. If I had been logged in, I wouldn't see an unavailable section. I would just see a list of all possible books. So if I tap on Tom Sawyer Abroad, for example, it's going to tell me a little bit about that book. There's a big download button. I'm going to get the data was added. And if this book is currently for sale, I'm going to get information like the ISBN number, the publisher, copyright, etc. I can tap download and it will download the text of the book, which typically only takes a matter of seconds to work. It's actually quite quick. I'm going to go back to my bookshelf. So I'm going to tap the bookshelf button in the bottom left corner.
Bookshelf.
And I'm going to go ahead and tap on Anne of Green Gables.
Anne of Green Gables.
Gives me
M. Montgomery.
Gives me information. No, I'm trying to talk over the read to go here. You'll see description and information about the book. I'm going to tap the button marked read.
A pending book.
Here I'll see the book. You'll see the paragraph. The first paragraph is highlighted in yellow. And across the bottom, I'll see some pretty standard transport controls. So a play, a forward, and a back button. If I tap the play button, it's going to read the book. I'll be quiet for a moment so you can hear what it sounds like.
There really was a tall, thin woman with angles and without curves. Her dark hair showed some gray streaks and was always twisted up in a hard little knot behind with two wiring.
So I'm going to go ahead and pause that. You'll notice that text-to-speech is a rather robotic voice. It's a computerized voice. It's functional, but it can be a little tiresome for longer reading sessions. You'll also notice that it highlights the words as we go along. So you'll see in green, as it was reading, it highlighted each word, and the yellow helps you identify what paragraph you're in. If I tap on the settings button, that's the button in the very top right corner that looks like a gear, you'll see I can adjust things like
audio settings.
The audio, I can choose a female voice, I can adjust my speed, and I can adjust the way these books look. So there's a lot of individual settings. Right now we're working on a new YouTube video from an individual named Joseph who uses Read2Go in the classroom along with some other apps, and he's going to demonstrate those as well. So that will be up on the YouTube page probably in the next week or two, so it's worth checking out. So that's the basics of Read2Go, when a lot of these book readers function. There's another one that came out not too long ago to compete with Read2Go called VoiceStream Reader. And VoiceStream Reader is actually one of my favorite reading apps on the iPad. So I'm going to go ahead and I left Read2Go and I'm going to tap on VoiceStream Reader and load that up. You'll see a somewhat similar interface with text on the screen. Instead of highlighting the paragraph, it highlights the line and the word is highlighted. Right now we're inside of a book, so I'm going to tap on the little house button in the top left corner to take you back. And here's a list their bookshelf list. What makes VoiceStream Reader a little bit different for Read2Go is it does also work with content from Bookshare, but it has a variety of other sources as well. If I tap on the settings button, it's a little gear in the bottom section where you see those four other buttons, you'll see a variety of accounts I can link up to VoiceStream Reader. I can link it up to Dropbox and literally take text files and put them in a Dropbox folder on my computer, and they'll be available on VoiceStream Reader on the iPad. They also have integration for Google Drive, Pocket, which is a great web-based tool for grabbing articles and news articles off of the internet, Instapaper, which is another one of those, Evernote, which we're actually going to talk about a little bit later, and also through Bookshare. The other thing that makes VoiceStream Reader unique is that I have a lot of voices to choose from. Now, it only comes with one voice to start out with, and I'm going to tap on the voice button. So right now I tapped to enter into a book. I chose Black Beauty. In the top right corner, I have a picture of what looks like the bottom portion of the mouth with words coming out. And if I go down here, you'll see for voices, there's an option called Manage My Voices. And I can tap on I get a list of the voices I have on the iPad. Right now it's using the iOS, the default one that came on. I can tap on Add Voices, and for a couple dollars each, I can actually download a lot of different types of voices here. So some really good high quality ones here. Here, I'll play a sample.
Hello, I am Tyler, the male Australian English synthetic voice from a cappella.
So I can get a voice with a nice accent if I want to. That one's just $1.99. So those audio voices tend to range from $2 to $5, and I can add those on. And there's quite a few of them that you could potentially use. They also include a variety of accents. So I'm going to go ahead and tap Done to go back. And I'll hit Play so you can kind of hear and see what VoiceStream Reader looks like. Well, let me make a little adjustment here. There we go. We were actually somewhere at the beginning of the book here. I'm going to take us to the center by using this little slider here.
37, the Golden Rule.
Oh, here we go. Excuse me. It was not visibly showing where we were reading on the screen a moment ago, but it's updated itself now. So I'm going to tap to play again.
First place that I can well remember was a large pleasant meadow with a pond of clear water in it. Some shady trees leaned over it.
So what it's doing is it's actually reading back the text on the screen using iOS's built-in voice. And those of you who've messed around with iOS's built-in voices knows you can actually choose different voices in your settings as well. So there's even more voices to choose from. So what I like about VoiceStream Reader, it's actually a little cheaper than Read2Go to start out with, and you can add on a variety of different voices. So those are two of my favorite apps for reading things text-to-speech on the screen. And I'm going to flip back now to my slides. And I want to talk about two or three other apps before we move on. In addition to I mentioned that Read2Go is designed for iOS. GoRead is an app very similar to Read2Go, available for the Android operating system. It's actually free to download. It works with Bookshare content and reads those books out loud. We demoed VoiceStream Reader. Learning Ally is another great resource. Now, I put in text-to-speech here, and some of you who use Learning Ally audio know that Learning Ally, which used to be called Recordings for the Blind and Dyslexic, is a place where they have volunteers read different books out in a human voice, and people can subscribe and download those individuals who benefit who have a print-related disability can download and listen to those. But they've recently added text as well, and even text-to-speech books. So you can get text-to-speech books through Learning Ally Audio. It's relatively new, but it's expanding pretty quickly, and it's got a pretty good integration, so I wanted to include them. Of course, none of these will read PDFs, which is a really, really common format that you'll come across for digital content. So I also want to include the Easy PDF Reader. This app opens PDFs, but also allows you to integrate text-to-speech inside of those apps. Now, keep in mind, not every single PDF you ever run into is accessible. Some PDFs are actually just photos of text. So the app has no way of identifying the text on the screen. And you would need OCR software and gets into a several-step process. But many of the PDFs that are created from computers have the ability to access the text in the PDF, and so Easy PDF Reader will do its best to read that text. Considering how frequently those can be, I wanted to make sure that you are aware of a cool one that does that with those PDFs as well. All right, so let's finish up our reading by talking about some digital book players. So these are apps that were specifically designed for books where you might be able to, in Read2Go, you might get periodicals or content from other places. These are apps that were designed as book readers themselves. Apple has their own called iBooks, and it has good support of VoiceOver, their screen reading software. There's also the Kindle app, which is made by Amazon. Now, the Kindle app originally, when it was launched, was not an accessible app. It did not work with iOS's screen reader, and you could not highlight certain aspects of the text. It was not very accessible. Over the course of the last few years, they have remedied that, and now the Kindle app does have VoiceOver support. They also have another feature called WhisperSync, which we're going to demonstrate in just a moment. Barnes & Noble also make a book reading app called the Barnes & Noble Nook app. That one was launched with screen reader access. There's a unique book reading app called Valeo, which we're going to demo. That's made by the same group that makes the Kurzweil software. If you're familiar with those software programs, Kurzweil 3000 and Kurzweil 1000, which are for scanning documents that have been read out loud, Valeo is for buying books that have already been scanned and has reading back capabilities. I mentioned we work with all ages. Disney's actually done a fairly good job of creating a platform for digital children's books that will read out loud, highlight the words as it reads along, and allow you to record your own voice on top of the book as well. It's a good example of some extra support, not always a perfect execution, but many of their books are designed using the same engine that they created, so you can expect a consistent experience. The last digital book player that I wanted to mention was Tar Heel Reader. Now, Tar Heel Reader is not technically an app. It's actually a website with a variety of easy-to-read, all-age interest digital books with pictures and usually just one or two sentences of text per page. They are optimized to work well in the web browsers on iOS and Android devices and work well with touchscreens, for example. So it is a great website to explore if you're looking for digital books that are of a wide interest level but are easy reading books. Now, I mentioned a moment ago with the Kindle app there was a particular feature I wanted to show you. And I'm going to flip back over to my iPad real quick so that you can see. Give me 1 second here. So you can see this kind of cool, relatively new feature that was added to the Kindle app. Now, Amazon, which makes the Kindle app, sells both text and audiobooks. And they recently, and they've had this feature for a while, where if you purchased both of the textbook and the audiobook, and you started listening to the audiobook, you could pause the audiobook, go back on, if you were listening to it like on your iPhone example, and you could go back to your tablet, open up that book and look at the text, and it will take you to the page that you stopped on in the audiobook. It's a rather interesting feature. I just opened up the Kindle app and I loaded up a book. I'm going to go back to the library here so you can see. So here's a list of all of our apps here. And we have a copy of the book Black Beauty, which we got. Now, Black Beauty is actually a free download from Amazon because it's out of copyright. But we did also purchase an audiobook version of Black Beauty. And if you look very carefully next to the Black Beauty book that's listed here, you'll see a picture of headphones. And that shows me that Amazon knows that I own both the audio and I own the text version of this book. So if I tap on that, it will load up the text version of the book. Now this is VoiceOver friendly, so I could use VoiceOver to read it back to me. But if I tap on the screen, you'll see a menu pops up. Across the top, there's a picture with headphones because it knows I've also bought the audiobook. If I tap, it will load up the audiobook for me. So here's the audiobook version. I can actually hit the play button to hear the audiobook play.
Hang on outside. Two fine horses were down. One was struggling in the...
But what's new, what they recently added, is if I tap it back to go to my book, so in the top right corner, you'll see a picture that looks like an open book. If I tap on that and I go back to the book, you'll see across the bottom, I'll have the now playing Black Beauty, that blue bar across the bottom here, and I have a play button to the right. It's got the page of text that I'm currently reading, and if I tap the play button, it will read the book, and when it reaches the end of this page, it will automatically turn the page for me and keep playing the audiobook. It will keep turning the pages for me automatically so I can listen to the audiobook and have the text available in front of me. Now, it's not going to highlight as I read along, which some of the other book readers had, but it does allow me to take these very well-made professional audiobooks and the physical book and combine them together. So if I hit play, you'll see I should be near the end of this page of this book.
Stream, and the other was groaning, and no doubt of dissatisfaction.
Oh, sorry. Cut the page.
Two fine horses were down. One was struggling in the stream, and the other was groaning on the grass.
So if I let it keep playing, when it reaches the end of this page, it will flip the page for me automatically. And those are for audiobooks you get that support what's called Whisper Sync. So that's a rather interesting feature that they added into the Kindle app. The other book reading app I wanted to show you is that one made by the same makers of Kurzweil, called Bleio. And Bleio is different from any of the other book reading apps because rather than give you a fully digital file, what it's doing is they've essentially scanned the book pages. So this is particularly good for children's books like this. So I can see exactly what the page looks like. If I pinch with my fingers, I can move in and out of the text. But you'll see it's not the same flowing text that I get in another book reading app. I'm going to tap on the screen and go back. I'm going to load up Sleepy Hollow. And you'll see the pages here look exactly like they would if I was holding the physical book. And I need to pinch to move in. Now, why would I prefer this versus the nice fully digital version that I get in Kindle where I can adjust the size of the text if I want, or in iBooks I can adjust the contrast? Where this is useful with books that include a lot of images or visuals, and I want to see exactly what that page looks like. But I can still use the benefit of text-to-speech. So if I tap and go back to the Peter Rabbit book, I tap on the screen here, I'll have a button in the bottom right corner, looks like a set of headphones with a play button in it, that will read the book to me. Now, the children's books are typically read by a human narrator.
"Now, my dears," said old Mrs. Rabbit one morning, "you may go into the field."
So I have a human voice. It highlights as I read along. Not all books use a human voice. The Sleepy Hollow book, for example, if I want to use read back for this, and I tap the playback button.
"And chuckling with the possibility that we might one day be lord of all this scene of all."
This book is read by a digital voice, but it's still highlighting as I move along so I can keep my space. When you want to add text-to-speech or audio to the books, many times in Bleio you do have to pay a couple dollars extra to add that support. So for text-to-speech, you would pay a couple dollars to get a digital voice. Oh, sorry, I tapped on the wrong button there. But it will take a couple dollars to download a digital voice that can be used, similar voice to reader, and you can reuse that for any book that uses text-to-speech, and then some of the books are available with a human voice built into it. So Leo just has a different angle to the way that they handle audio playback of their books. All right, so let's flip back and to our screen here. Give me one moment. Apologize here. Lost track of what button I needed to press there. There we go. So I'm back in our inner slides here. So those are some of the better reading apps. There's a ton out there, and one of the handouts that's available through a link in the handout that was distributed earlier are reading apps just for iOS and Android devices. It's got literally, I think, about 60 different reading apps for different needs, but these are the ones that have been really popular amongst the staff here at Pacer. So let's talk about some of the writing apps out there. One particular writing app has been getting a lot of news lately is an app called Flexi. Flexi is a keyboard that was designed for low vision or blind use. It uses a variety of word prediction, and it doesn't demo particularly well right now, but it's a free app to download and explore. And what it does is it allows you to tap on the keyboard, and it understands that you may not press the right key. So any user who's been using a screen reader on iOS for a while has probably been typing by dragging their finger across the keyboard to find the right keys and releasing or double tapping to make a selection. After a while, you start to get used to you start to get used to where the keys are on the keyboard. Flexi assumes that you're going to just tap where you feel the keys are after you've done some practice, and it knows that you might have actually meant to press a key that was adjacent to that one. Based on where you tapped, it's going to give you predictions about what you were typing, not necessarily what exactly keys you hit. And it's a rather interesting app, worth exploring as well. Right now in iOS, it's available only, you can only write inside the app, although they are working on a full system-wide keyboard for when iOS 8 comes out, and they do have an Android version so you can replace the keyboard as well. Another great app is called iReadWrite. iReadWrite is a word prediction app, and it also will read back what you write to you. We're going to be demoing a word prediction app called CoWriter in just a moment, but iReadWrite was one of the first really high-quality word prediction apps. So as you type it, guesses what you're trying to say and allows you to make a selection so you don't have to type the entire word out. But also, it is a on-the-spot, quick spell checker as well. It doesn't assume that you're pressing the exact right keys. It looks at what you're typing, it looks at what you typed before it, and it makes guesses about what you're trying to write. We're going to demo what that looks like if you've never used word prediction in just a moment. Now, CoWriter is a word prediction app that's been particularly popular for a long time now, and very popular and very powerful. And they came out with an iOS version of their app, and which was really great because it's actually a pretty low-cost version. I had not heard back yet from them to hear whether or not they're making a system-wide one for iOS 8 when that comes out, but I suspect it might be in the works for them. We're going to demo that one in just a moment. Another really popular alternative keyboard is one called Swipe. And Swipe is a keyboard where instead of tapping on each letter on the keyboard, you simply move your finger from one key to the next and release when you're done. And it will, based on the motion that you made, it will make a prediction of what it thought you were trying to type. So it's a combination of word prediction, and it allows you to not have to lift your finger up over and over again. An individual with motor difficulties, and the idea of lifting, putting down and lifting up over and over again is difficult, this can be a nice alternative way of typing. Swipe is currently available for the Android platform and will become available on iOS come this fall when iOS 8 comes out. They are officially working on a version that will work system-wide as well. There are other swiping style keyboards available for iOS, but they'll be getting a lot better when iOS 8 comes out. The last one is one of the most popular note-taking apps. We have an intern right now who came in for a consult a while back and has been using this app that we told him about in this consult for his college work. And AudioNote is an app that allows you to record audio while you write and play it back. And it's best demo than it is explained. So I'm going to jump in the co-writer and then show you audio note real quick. Okay, so let me just bring this up. So to start us out here, I'm going to load up CoWriter. So I'm going to do a quick search on my iPad for CoWriter. So this is CoWriter. You'll see a list of existing writing assignments I've been working on. Across the top right, you're going to see a plus button with a circle on it. That's going to be my button for starting a new writing assignment, so I'm going to tap on plus. You'll see across the screen here a big text cursor, my keyboard at the bottom, and a couple buttons across the top to adjust my settings. If I start to type, so I'm going to start typing, I'm going to type in H, E, you'll see above the keyboard is a selection of predictions here. So you'll see here, her, he, he's, have. It's trying to guess what I'm trying to type, and if I would like to select one of those, I just tap on it. You'll notice it doesn't assume that I'm spelling this word correctly. Have is an option there, and I've started out with H-E. If I wanted to select this, I'm going to go ahead and tap on here, and it's actually going to echo what I typed.
Here.
You'll already see a group of predictions available above the keyboard. You'll see is, a, I, are, and the. Basically, it's looking at what I've written, and it's thinking about what I might want to say next. So I might want to say here, R, and I can just simply tap on the button, R. I can start tapping. You'll see S pops up. I type in S, and I get sorry, so, some, such, sure. So it's trying to predict what I'm typing. Now, when iOS 8 comes out, you will see a built-in word prediction keyboard will be available right off the bat. And on Android, there are several word prediction-based keyboards you can download. So what makes CoWriter special? And that is, I can tell it what I'm typing about and change the way its predictions work. So I went ahead and I deleted what I just wrote there. And I'm going to tap on the button in the top right corner that looks like a bunch of books next to each other. What this is my topic dictionary, and I can say I'm writing about a specific topic. There's a variety of options. I can go ahead and create my own topics, but I'm going to choose this one, Abraham Lincoln, for example, which you can see on the screen. So obviously Abraham Lincoln, Albert Einstein, global warming's there. I'm going to choose Abraham Lincoln, and I'm going to tap the X button to go back. Now, when I start to type, it's going to make the assumption I'm writing about Abraham Lincoln. So if I type the letter G, for example, you'll see good, got, get, going, and Gettysburg. The reason why is because obviously it's a historical place and battle that was relevant to Abraham Lincoln, and it's going to make assumptions that I'm writing about him, and it's going to predict words that are related to that topic. So this could be particularly useful when writing about a particular school assignment and getting the right words to pop up. I can also create my own topic dictionaries as well for a reader to help promote particular word use or vocabulary words that we're working on, for example. So CoWriter's big advantage is these topic dictionaries and what makes it a really, really strong word prediction app. So we're going to leave that, and I'm going to go into Audio Note real quick. Audio Note is a note-taking app, which I mentioned earlier. And with Audio Note, so here's Audio Note. You'll see a list of my notes on the left-hand side, a canvas area that looks like a piece of lined paper, and a variety of buttons. I'm going to go ahead and start a new note. So I'm going to tap the plus button near the top left corner. So here I'll get a blank page. And there's a big red record button near the middle top of the page. And when I tap that, it's going to start recording all the audio that's being said. So for example, if I was in a class, and I'm going to go ahead and tap the record button, I'm starting my class, and it's a math class. So I'm going to type in the word math. And we started talking about equations here. So I want to type in equations. And the teacher just drew something up on the board. So in the top right corner, you'll see a variety of buttons. So one looks like T for text. One looks like a pen. I'm going to tap on my pen. And I'm actually going to draw this equation out. So we're just going to do Y equals. Of course, I could also use the keyboard for this, but maybe I like writing up better. We'll say 3x plus 1. And I'm going to tap and go back to my type. And I'm going to tap at the bottom here, and I can start writing some more. And let's say the teacher says something really important. Let me go back to my pen here, and the teacher says, this is really important. It's going to be on the quiz. So I'm just going to draw a quick star here to say, hey, that's really important. That's just a symbol for me to go back later. So now when I'm done with my class, I'm going to tap that blue playback button at the very top. I've got a playback control similar to how you might have on a audio or music player, for example, a play forward and back and a long bar that represents time. And if I just tap play, it will play back.
I'm starting my class, and it's a math class.
So it's playing back what's being said. Well, anybody who's used an audio recorder knows that if you record an hour-long lecture, it's really hard to find that important thing you need to review somewhere in the center. What's nice about this is if I want to jump to the point in the class where I know something important happened, I said that there was going to be something on the test, so I drew a star, is if I tap on that star, it automatically moves the playback to what was being said when I drew that star. So if I hit play again.
This is really important. It's going to be on the quiz.
So it makes it really easy for me to find my spot again. If I play back it from the very beginning, you'll also notice that some of the text turns blue. So I'm going to slide the slider over till the Y appears blue. And now I know that that's playing back what was happening when I was drawing that equation. So this is a nice tool. We had a young man who is now interning with us here use this as a note-taking tool in his college classes. He was unable to write and keep up with notes, and so he had a note-taker system, but he wanted to do it more independently. And so this allowed him to keep an audio recording of the entire class and cut down on the amount of writing he had to actually do. He would just take quick shorthand and play back his audio, and it gave him a lot more independent way of taking notes. So that is that's AudioNote, one of my favorite note-taking apps. All right, so let's go back. So those are some really nifty writing tools. We have another one of our handouts that we sent out ahead of time in that long listing that is actually just writing apps, so you can go into those more in depth. There's a lot of apps available for math as well. Now, there's a big emphasis on exercise or practice apps as well, but there are some nice ones for writing as well. There's a recently free one called ModMath. We're going to demonstrate that one. That's for using a grid to write things out. It just makes writing math problems and solving math problems a little bit easier on the iPad, but it's not necessarily calculator. It's just for writing out. So it's great individuals with dysgraphia, for example. There's other great apps like MathRef. MathRef is a giant reference. So if a student is struggling with remembering exactly the way they do certain equations, it's a quick reference guide for how to solve different math problems, going all the way from basic math all the way up to advanced calculus. It's a reference guide, but it's very searchable, so it's easier than a regular textbook. dCalc Lite is a nice big button scientific calculator, and the Lite version is free. They have a pro version which adds a bunch of built-in equations and other advanced tools, but the Lite version offers a really good big button calculator that's also offers scientific, so it's available and usable for a variety of different grades, not just beginners. So it's not just a beginner calculator. Wolfram Alpha, which you might know from their webpage, is a giant calculation tool where you can actually type in a math problem and it will break it down for you and give you the answer, but also break it down into its different meanings and give you different visual examples. It's a good learning app as well. Also for fun, you can put in banana and it will tell you the nutritional value of a average banana, for example. Or you could type in a company name and it will give you the value, number of employees, recent stock information, etc. So it's I've heard people refer to it as an answer engine. And so Google gives you search results of web pages. Wolfram Alpha gives you answers related to math and science. The last one I want to reference is an app called IXL Math Practice. And this is a gigantic app of practice quizzes and refresher quizzes that you can take. And we're going to take a look at that one in just a moment. So let's go ahead and let me launch back up our iPad and we'll start out with ModMath here. So I'm going to go ahead and do a quick search for ModMath. So I mentioned ModMath is a tool that is designed for writing out and answering math problems. It's not meant to be a calculator because they want to make this so this is a tool that an individual with dysgraphia could use in a test situation. So for example, if I am creating a practice test that I want someone to fill out on the iPad, I can simply type in, let's go, I'm doing a basic math one here, we'll go 12, and I can go down here and I'll go ahead and put the plus operator in, we'll put in 6, and you'll see it tries to automatically format it for me. I've got 12 plus 6 and a line underneath that. Which you put in automatically. So as you might notice, it looks like just one giant piece of graph paper. And I can tap inside of boxes and put in numbers, equations, and operators. A student can then use this area and these tools to fill out and write in math problems. Like I said, it's designed to be a good test-taking tool. I've opened up the settings app here. You can see I can adjust the settings, but you'll notice that there's no calculator built into it. It's just for writing out math problems and answering them. So it's a test-friendly math app, which I've had a lot of people request. And so it's a free one to download. It's really great and worth exploring. Leaving that app, I'm going to launch up the IXL Math app here. And IXL basically has a long list of practice tests I can take. So if I jump into third grade math here, you'll see all the different math concepts that a third grader would start to learn and master, and I can go ahead and practice. So if I'm going to go ahead and tap on subtraction, for example, you'll see it breaks it down to even more subcategories in subtraction. So I've got a nice long list here. So I can see subtract numbers up to 3 digits. I'm going to tap on that. And I'll get a quick test here. So you can see on the screen, 905 minus 52. I can tap inside of this box and I can write in my answer. So 905, so I'm going to say this is, I'm going to tap on the 100 spot and I'm going to type in 8. I'm going to say we've got 52. So we're going to go, I'm going to delete the singles and put in 3. And we'll tap on the 10 spot and go to 5. And then I can tap submit. Ah, I get a positive, keep it up. If I put in the wrong number here, I'm going to tap submit. It's going to tell me, sorry, incorrect. It's going to review it. So show me the question, what was the answer? And I can drag down and it will give me an explanation to how I could have solved it. So it is a nice tool for reinforcing practicing of these concepts. It does give me the solution in the way of breaking it down, but it's not really designed to be a teaching tool. It's made to be designed for review. So that is the IXL Math app. All right, so moving right along here. There are a variety of communication apps available in mobile devices as well. So these are ones that would be used for an individual who didn't have a voice of their own. I'm not an expert in communication, but I did talk to our specialist here, and she brought out some of her favorites. Now, iOS definitely has an up on the number of communication of apps available, but there are more and more coming out every day. I'm not going to go into great detail in these communication apps, but the good ones are Cadillac One that's been around for a long time since the beginning of the iPad is an app called ProloQuo2Go. ProloQuo2Go is a communication app that has a lot of customizability to it, allows you to have a picture symbol system, a typing system. It integrated in Switch Control before Apple even had iOS's own Switch Control in, built into it. And it's been around for a long time, but it was built specifically for iOS, and it was a brand new communication app. And it didn't follow some of the standards that some of the other communication apps that have been around for a long time have done. So along came Toby, which makes a variety of communication apps, and they made an app called Sonoflex. Sonoflex uses Toby's picture symbol system, primarily a picture base. It does not have as much as the typing and word prediction, but it does follow along the symbols that you'll see typically on these Toby devices. So for some users who are switching from a Toby device to using an iPad, it was a great app for that. Lamplord for Life is a fantastic app that also applies, that also is a iPad version of a much higher end communication device platform. That one uses a motor memorization system and to make it make finding and exploring and finding words easier. It's got a whole philosophy behind it that we do not have the time to go over today, but it is one of our communication specialists' favorite communication apps by far. Android has available a new app called Speak for Yourself, another great communication app, picture symbol systems. And it's been getting a lot of attention, and we have been playing around with it at the SDC, and it is very, very popular. And the last one that I think is worth exploring is one called My First AAC. This is an AAC app that is designed for first-time and communication users. Very simple, children's voices built into it, very unique take on communication. Definitely worth exploring. It doesn't use the same picture symbol systems or standards you're going to find in Lamp or Toby, but it is a unique take, a very child-friendly layout, so it's worth exploring. There are a variety of apps that also cover social skills by giving either example videos, a video modeling, for example, like an app called Everyday Social Skills, made by an app company named Conover. It's a 99-cent app with a couple dozen different video models for various situations from day to day. So they have adults learning how to meet and greet new people, take responsibility for mistakes, staying on task, interrupting a conversation. For only 99 cents, it is a significant collection of videos and an excellent app at just a really, really great price. Conover Company also makes an app called the Functional Planning System. The Functional Planning System allows you to take video models and put them on a schedule on a month-by-month basis. We'll look at that one really quickly. The other app that's been gaining some traction called the Social Express, which uses computer-animated characters in different social situations, has the student watch a social situation as it plays out, and then try to guess the correct reaction. The pricing on that's got a little more complicated because they've moved from a buy model to a subscription model. But you'll find that one available on just about any platform, and it's really interesting we're exploring. We're going to take this really quickly in the Functional Planning System app so you can see what that looks like. So let me just open up the Functional Planning System app here. You'll see on the left-hand side a list of tasks or to-dos, and the right-hand side is a blank area. So if I tap on Morning Routine, you'll see I have a Floss and Brush Your Teeth option, and I can actually add in my own with photos or text. I'm going to tap on
how to floss and brush your teeth. This says how to floss and brush your teeth. Flossing and brushing your teeth keeps your teeth and breath clean.
I'm going to go ahead and stop that video, but you'll see what it does is it allows me to take a video or a photo or text and assign it to an activity in a list and actually pull it back. I can shoot my own videos or I can download their videos for about $1 to $1.99 each in their add-on section. It allows us to set up a calendar with reminders. It's a rather interesting and engaging task management and social skills app. So I'm going to flip us back over to our slides here. And I'm moving along a little bit swiftly here because I want to make sure I get through all of these in time here. There's a variety of great organizational apps for the iOS and Android platform as well. One of my favorites is an app called Wunderlist. It's a simple task management app, and recently in an interview, Ira Glass, host of This American Life for the NPR listeners out there, this is his organizational app by choice as well. Basically allows you to create simple task lists and then sync them between a computer, an Android device, an iOS device, Windows, Mac. Works on just about everything. It's free. They have a pro version for companies who are doing collaborative work, but for individuals, it is 100% free and by far one of the greatest organizational apps that I've used for that price point. Another really popular one on Android is AnyDo. AnyDo is similar to Wunderlist in that it's a simple task management app with check marks and lists and basic organization. We do have a friend here. I do have a friend here that uses an app called Evernote. Evernote is a note-taking app, but it can also be used for organization. Basically, you can take a photo, write something on the screen, use an audio recording to take a note down, but recently they added the ability for you to set that note with a reminder. So you could write something quickly down or record your voice saying something, and then schedule a time for your device to remind you about that later. So it will play a sound, do an alert, and when I tap on it in Evernote, it will go back and show me that note. I had a couple of students take photos of assignments written on the board and set reminders for themselves at home. So when they got home, the app would remind them to look at the picture they took. This is particularly good if they didn't want to spend the time or had difficulty writing the assignment written down on the board. It's a really great solution for that. iStudies Pro is an app designed specifically for students. It has a task list that's based on classes, organizes your schedule based on what classes you have each day, and even stores content information if your teachers or you have a question. So it was voted one of the best organizational apps for students a couple of years ago, and I think it really is. So these are some great organizational apps to explore. I'm going to show you really quick. Actually, let me show you. I've got one app in Vision that I really, really want to make sure I have time to show you because it's really cool. And then we'll look at questions and look at some of the other apps if we've got time. Vision is an interesting category because there's some really interesting and innovative things happening in Vision. A particularly popular app for Android and iOS is an app called TapTapSee. TapTapSee is an app that allows you to take a photo of something on the screen in real life and have the image right back to you as a detailed description. It's hard to explain and better to demo. We'll demo it in just a moment. There are two great free magnifiers available as well. Claro Mag X for iOS is a magnification app. Uses the camera, allows you to magnify, allows you to increase or decrease the contrast. Nice overall and around magnification tool. Your Magnifier is a good one for Android with a very similar feature set. And Braille Touch is a Braille keyboard for iOS that allows you to hold the iPad and tap the screen to write out different Braille cells. It's a free app to explore, and if you've never tried to do any Braille writing on an iOS device before, or you want to learn Braille, it's actually a pretty good app to start with. I'm going to go ahead and jump right into TapTapSee because it's a pretty interesting and unique app, and I want you to really see how it works here. So I'm going to flip myself back over one more time to my iPad here. Now this app is designed to work with the iPhone optimally, but it works really good for iOS as well. So I'm going to go ahead and bring up TapTapC. Now TapTapC is designed to work with a VoiceOver. So I'm going to go ahead and turn on VoiceOver. So it's going to give you a warning that it's off here. I've got a shortcut set up so I can set up VoiceOver really quickly.
TapTapC, take picture, button.
So I'm going to hold my iPad up in the direction of an object I'd like it to identify. I'm going to double tap.
Picture 2 in progress.
It's going to take that photo. It's uploading it to a server, identifying the contents, and in a moment, it will describe it to us. Now it does use the...
Picture 2 is Silver House Key.
So you'll see it explains that object to me. Now this app, I haven't gotten a confirmation exactly...
Alert. Selected.
Exactly how they do this, but I believe they actually do hire people on the other side to describe the pictures. So if I took a picture of a person, for example, it will actually say back to me, woman in red dress smiling. You will get that level of description from TapTapC, depending on the object. I took a picture of a computer before, and it told me it was a Apple MacBook Pro and actually identified the type of computer. So. It's a rather interesting app. You'll see a lot more of these identification apps popping up here and there. But TapTapC is a very interesting one that we have a couple of people using very successfully. Okay, well we're running low on time here. So I want to encourage everybody to look through that extensive resource list I provided in the handout. It's going to give you a significant selection of apps to choose from. But I hope you got some good ideas about what was available. And I'm going to take a quick look if we've got time to see if we have any questions that I can quickly answer.
Great. So, well, thanks, Jonathan. That was absolutely wonderful. I was looking. I did not see too many questions coming up. But I think what you have done is shown us a variety of wonderful things with leaving us really wanting more of all of this. So if anybody does have a quick question for Jonathan, please feel free to put that in the chat room right now. We have a few minutes for questions. But if we don't hear any questions, then we might look at one more demo, but in fact I think we're pretty much at the end of it, so I'm not seeing any questions, anybody? Last opportunity right now, otherwise I think we're probably going to have to call it a day for today. This has been just the most interesting demonstration from everybody's point of view, I must say, so thank you so much for that. Let me just check to see. There is a question that has come up from Great Lakes. One of them is, may we share the handouts from this webinar with others on our website? Maine CITE maintains a resource called Apps as AT, which is a list of lists of apps that can be used as assistive technology. So I guess the question to you, Jonathan, is can this list of handouts be shared?
Absolutely. I would love for you to share that. All this information we want to be available freely, and if you would distribute, you feel free to redistribute any of the materials that I gave you. If it does have the PACER copyright on it or that material, I appreciate if you just keep that, you don't take that off. But absolutely, please share that in any way that you'd like. Print it out, email it, any way that you feel is appropriate.
Great, thanks. Okay, a couple of other questions are coming in thick and fast right now. Does Blio work with college textbooks? Does it require PDF with OCR coding? And can you import text to word processing programs such as Microsoft Word?
Well, the Blio app, it does have a selection. They have been working with different textbook providers. I haven't gotten a really good feeling for how extensive their book collection is. Blio is just for getting content from their marketplace, though. So you're not going to get a way of getting in a different PDF. You're going to do better with like an easy, like that easy PDF reader. Or if you want to do Word documents, that VoiceDream reader, dropping in a Word document into like a Dropbox account is a great way to get there. But Bulio is mostly going to be a place where you're going to want to, if you're going to be using the books that they have available to you.
Lovely. I think we've got a few more minutes. Isn't that lovely? Will these apps for Android and iOS do the color conversion for any file viewed on the device, or does the file need to be formatted correctly for that purpose? And can non-Bookshare books be accessed through Read2Go?
As far as the Read2Go question, the Read2Go basically its search, its index, its way it pulls in books. As far as the exploration I've done, it is just for Bookshare books. The reason why the VoiceDream reader has been particularly appealing to me recently, since it has lots of other ways to bring it in. But I have not discovered a way to bring books into Read2Go from other sources. I know you could maybe get, there's some hacky sort of ways you could do it, but I don't think it's officially supported. Could you repeat the first half of that question again? I'm not sure if I caught that entirely.
Well, let me just scroll back up to that particular question. It was, will the apps for Android and iOS do the color conversion for any file viewed on the device, or does the file need to be formatted correctly for that purpose? Not sure exactly what that means, but maybe you can interpret that.
Oh. I do think, well, I think referring to in like VoiceDream Reader and Read2Go, I could do things like change the background color, change the way that the font size, things like that. If I'm moving into an app like VoiceDream Reader or Read2Go, it's basically pulling in the, it needs to be a digital text. It can't be a PDF. You need to use something like the Easy PDF Reader to get the PDFs, but if it's just text, then absolutely any of those color conversions, so if it's like a Word document or a plain text document, it will pull those in quite nicely. And if you're pulling from the web, VoiceDream Reader will pull, basically extract the text from the article and allow you to reformat it any way you like. If you're dealing with a PDF, something like that Easy PDF Reader, it's not going to be able to allow you to change the appearance of the text very much. It will let you change the highlight color, for example, but you're not going to be able to change the contrast of the background too much. It will just follow what the document looks like exactly. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you. Okay, two last questions, and they both just require a yes and no answer. The first one is, have you heard of SonoSent Audio Note Taker, which will let you record, edit, store, and sort audio recordings? And then the second question is, do you need Wi-Fi for TapTapC?
The Sono one, I'm not sure they have a desktop. I have not used that one on mobile, so no, and I'm definitely going to need to explore that and look up more about that app. The TapTapC, you do need an internet connection. So if you're on an iPad, you absolutely need Wi-Fi. If you're on a phone, you can use the cellular network to send the photo, but you do need an internet connection because it is sending it to a server before it's processing it back. So no internet connection, then TapTapC no longer works.
Excellent. Okay, well, I think that's all we have time for. Jonathan, that was wonderful. So thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it. And for those of you who might not have got the lists, we will be sending out those lists again, make sure that everybody does get them. Just to let a reminder that next session we are going to be looking at Android accessibility, not in terms of the apps as Jonathan has done, but really just in terms of the actual accessibility features of the Android platform in more detail, and that is on the 25th of September. So please join us for that. And also a request that we will be sending a link through for you to fill in for evaluations of this particular session. We always appreciate your comments and input on these sessions for us when we're starting to plan for the next year too. So please fill those out, send them back to us. And once again, Jonathan, our deepest thanks to you for doing that. And we look forward to meeting everybody again on the 25th of September.